Again, I want to thank everybody for coming today. It's a big deal to put yourself out for something where you have no idea what you're getting yourself into, and to make a journey as as big as the journey you've all made to be here. And it's a real blessing for me to find such angelic beings sitting in front of me, because you never know what you're going to get from both ends. And this is the first class in Redmond. I basically just reached out into the universe and said, here I am. And it's extraordinary that, you know, that people would arrive. Beginnings are everything. How you begin something has a lot to do with how you end it. How much you want something tends to indicate how much you're going to get. Nabokov, the great author, said that a novel is only as good as the fire that ignites it. If it burns out halfway through, you're in trouble. Somebody has to be responsible for that initial ignition. And somebody has to be responsible for blowing on those coals and keeping this thing going, because lights go out. And you know when the light goes out. You know it. You're sitting in a very cold world without something warming you, taking care of your wealth, health, well-being. And then it's really a matter of how you sustain. And mostly, if we're conscious and we come across something that nurtures us, we keep working at it. But 3 months ago, I went to a gym to look at the pool. And I just wanted to swim. I came out an hour later with a year's membership and a personal trainer. And I had no idea how I got that. They're such good salesmen at these gyms. And he wanted me to come 3 times a week. And I already had so many other things going on. I just moved here. It was part of the chaos of moving here. But I recognized very quickly this was good for me. This was good. And it didn't show me how wonderful I was. It showed me all the weaknesses I had, one after another after another. And this trainer that I got, this man named Jeremy, is a really wonderful, wonderful person. And he has had all sorts of injuries. So he absolutely understands everything I'm dealing with enormous empathy. And he's very inventive, which means he creates a schedule and I arrive and he completely reinvents the schedule, because he needs to be responsive to the moment rather than to what he wants to give. He is just available. And he pushes me just enough. And gives me a sense of why working hard is meaningful. And of course, I feel results. It's been 3 months, but I never knew I had a core. And I do. And it's getting strong. Injuries that I had are getting better. I told him my only goal was to be able to be strong enough to lift my grandson. And I found that that's not going to be any problem at all. But I had problems with, you may remember this, those of you who've been around my talks that I crawled into a bouncing bubble tent with my granddaughter, and I don't know what I did when I pulled myself in, but my rotator cuff just shredded. And at one point I was walking down the street with her and I tried to avoid a bump and I lifted up the carriage and fell right over the carriage, and to not hurt her, I fell onto the side of the sidewalk, and I just spent months and months working with shoulder issues. And here at the gym, it's all getting strong. You can just feel it getting strong. And I feel like, not a new person, but you know, for a 71-year-old guy, I feel I have kind of evolving strengths that I didn't have even before. I mean, I'm a writer. The Jeremy says, you know, you have the build of a writer. You sit like this. You know, that's how writers sit. And they actually, their spines turn into this kind of sort of leaning over yourself. And he's trying to get me to do this, which is good. And, you know, posture is something that you have to be aware of all day long, not just in the gym. I relate to all this because I'm beginning a new process. And I am totally committed. I don't miss a class. I show up on time. I do my warm-up. I do a lot of cardio because he wants me to do cardio. It's all good. I went to the heart doctor the other day because he was worried that my pulse was too low. And the heart doctor says, you've got the heart of a 43-year-old man, which is like, I had no idea I had the heart of a 43-year-old man. So now I have no excuses at all other than to just pursue this manifested physical state that I'm in and bring it more health. And I'm, you know, I'm old and I'm starting this late. I used to swim all the time and I walked on the treadmill for years, so it's not like I've never done anything. But I am really, really into a situation where I am trying to be more, better. And, you know, everyone I know in spiritual life who's pursued this at all, they would take very good lessons from a trainer at the gym, because they don't listen to your excuses of why you can't do it today. I can't show up today because I've got this going on and that going on. They don't want to hear. They just want you to show up. The body immediately tells you and tells them whether you've been working on your own or whether you haven't been working on your own, where you're at, whether you're getting stronger or not getting stronger. Spiritual life is the same thing. There are people who show up once every 2 months, and it's like going to the gym once every 2 months. They go, hey, look at that. And I go, you know, there's nothing there. You know, you think you're developing something, but you're not. Because the lack of consistency absolutely gets in the way of your attainment. It has to be something you work at, you give yourself over to. And I don't even have a mindset that says, I don't want to go. I mean, I do. Trust me, I don't want to go. I don't want to go to the gym at all, anytime that I have to go. But I don't have anything that will stop me at all. Because I just go. That's what I do because I know it's the right thing and it's a good thing. And the minute you bring up something in your life as an argument against doing something, discipline goes out the window. Great thing about discipline is you don't question. You just do. The minute you have to make a choice, should I go to the gym today? We all know who wins. We all know. The mind always wins over the duty or the possibility of consistency. So one has to commit to a kind of consistent, persistent practice in order to get where? Well, the goal of being able to lift my grandson is already in place. That happened faster than I ever imagined. But clearly, there's so much more. There's so much more to get. But it's not like I'm going to get anything. It's not like I'm going to get a certificate that's going to say, wow, you did it. Did what? All I'm going to get is healthy, stronger, probably live a life going to gyms instead of doctors, which I think is a great trade-off. I would much rather go to the gym than sit in a doctor's office. I will have a life with some dynamic, some vitality, some real joy, and I'll pay a price, which is a constant effort. Spiritual work is exactly the same. Exactly the same. You're not going to get something. You're not going to get something in the end, a certificate. I mean, look, there are people who go out and become swamis. That's okay. You can be a swami, but it doesn't change anything. It doesn't change anything because you're still just a person working. You have a title, you have robes, but you're still just a person trying to get through life. We're all trying to get through life. But in the gym, the side benefit is health, well-being. In spiritual practice, the side benefit is presence, well-being. Presence, which is a kind of health, is an awareness that you have an existence in this material realm. The gym really tells you that. When you're doing your 50th squat or whatever it is you're working on, and your legs and your muscles are absolutely painful, and you think you can't do another one, and they say, just three more, and then you do three more, he said, I lied, four more, and then you go, oh, and you can do it. You can do it. And what happens when you do it is you walk out of that gym on rubbery legs, but boy, do you feel like you're real, like you're a human being, and you're in a body. Spiritual life isn't about becoming disembodied, although you may have wonderful moments of what feels like disembodiedness. Spiritual life is being real in this space. Real, healthy, present. To be aware that you are actually here, wherever here may be. That is something that rarely happens. We talked about it when you came in today. So many people never arrive where they are. They're always, you know, waiting to be somewhere where they're supposed to get to, or miserable because they didn't do something 20 years ago, or they regret something, or they missed a path that they could have taken. There's all of this drama surrounding woulda, coulda, shoulda, and none of this awareness of this. What brings you to this? Well, one very good thing is pain. I know we don't like it, but in the gym, as the pain happens, I'm here. You can't avoid the recognition of pain. It's so immediate. And there I am, and I'm working out, and it's getting harder, and there's burning happening, and I don't like it. But I don't want to admit that I don't like it, really, unless it's really, really bad. So I keep at it. And then I get a moment to relax. I get about a minute before we do the next thing. And I go, I've never felt as good as I feel in that minute after the pain. I feel like I did something. I'm really here. I'm doing something for the long run, for this moment, for good, for the goodness of my being. And I feel a kind of gratitude. And then I'm kind of amazed that my body can do these things because it never did do them before. And I'm going, this is a sense of well-being, really of well-being. I can't rest in it very long because they're going to push the next thing in just a moment. But I get that few moments of like, wow. Spirituality is exactly the same thing. You get these moments of appreciation where you actually know this is happening. Where you go, wow, it is so beautiful. And beauty is a key word. It's a key word in knowing your present, because you start to see it everywhere. You will see ugliness, but only because you know what beauty is. You will know beauty. People sometimes think this is a dream. A lot of people doing spiritual work, their whole goal, and I've said this many times, so forgive me if it's a repeating thing, the whole goal of many people doing spiritual work is get me out of here. They don't want to be here. They want to be, I don't know, in some disembodied space, in some place of complete repose. Whatever it is, it has nothing to do with here. They want to be there. But you're not there. You're here. And wanting to be somewhere else is the problem. The only way to make peace with your life is to give up the dream of being something other and be this. This will get you to that. And when you get to that, it will be this. But you will not get there by not embracing this, because you will have zero foundation, to be able to support the that that you're looking for. You have to absolutely, completely give yourself over to being here, because this is the foundation on which you will build your entire existence. And if you don't build a solid foundation, very Rudy-esque, really, if you don't build a solid foundation, you will have a structure that will crumble at some point. It just will not support you. So being here is really important. Jeremy tells me, I can't work with you to do that until the core is solid. So let's work on that. And then he shows me, it's really interesting. There are these muscle groups that are big muscle groups, and you do really heavy-duty stuff. And then there are these tiny little muscle groups. But if those little muscle groups aren't strengthened, then the big ones can't work. So you do these little tiny exercises. I'm just doing this thing with my back. It's just little tiny stuff. It's not even with your shoulders. It's with these muscles right in the middle of your upper back. And he has me just do these little squeezing things. And after a while, it actually starts to hurt. But that activates the back. There are all these little things in life that are so boring and repetitive and dull, but they're essential to get the little muscle so you can have the big muscle. We have to do what's in front of us. And what's amazing to me about life is that what's in front of us, one, it's yours. Two, it's essential because it's there. The car breaks down, you can cry and yell and do whatever you want, but that it does nothing. You still have to take it to the shop or get a tow truck, and you have to go through all of these various journeys and steps along the way in order to get it fixed. And yes, it interrupts everything you had planned to do, but it's the thing that's there. And that's real. It's real. Unless you have $1 billion and you can have your assistant take care of it, it's your thing. And if you have your assistant take care of it, then you have to take care of the other stuff that comes up. So everybody has to do what's presented to them. And you can either do it in a state of resistance, which makes it miserable, or you do it in a state of surrender, which means acceptance. It's easy to accept that you just won the lottery, maybe. It's not easy to accept that you owe the government $100,000 more than you thought, or $10,000, or whatever the thing is. Life presents you easy, and it presents hard. Surrender and accepting isn't to one thing and not the other. It's a total package. You just open and you say yes to life, yes to this. If you want to know the true essence of spiritual work, that's it. Yes to what is. You can also say no to what is, consciously, and then take responsibility for the choice that will change it. You absolutely have a right to do that. You don't have to eat shit sandwiches, Rudy said. You can say, I pass. But then you have to eat something. So you're going to have to figure out what the thing is you're going to eat so that you can find the nourishment for your life. You have to find a way to get through every day and find a way for every day to be meaningful to you. Spiritually, what happens is we work, we sit and we meditate, and we find a place in ourselves that feels grateful to be here. Really grateful. It's like, oh, if I could just sit here all day, every day for the rest of my life, it would be perfect. You can actually get to a place like that. Excuse me. But you can't stay there unless you're a Buddhist in a cave somewhere. And then what happens when you leave the cave? You know, when the mosquitoes come and all the things that happen to you in a cave. You know, in life, you have your meditative perfection, and then you get up and you have to deal with a mother-in-law, or you have to deal with, somebody calling you and, you know, making a crank call or whatever, and you just go, why? Why? Because that's what's happening. And because your reaction to it, your response to it, is the core. It's the core. You say yes. Hello? No, I'm really not interested. Goodbye. No tension, no anger, no raging at the universe. Just another crank call. Goodbye. You find a way to move through life with a kind of deep simplicity. In the beginning, in the early years of spiritual work, it's training. You make an effort to stay simple. You make an effort to take a breath and let go of the anger that somebody got you out of, away from the dinner table to ask you for God knows what. You just go, okay, no thank you, goodbye. At some point, the awakening takes place, and then the effort is different. The effort is different. It's still there, but you watch it taking place. A friend of mine called the awakening, you're in the passenger seat. You're not in the driver's seat. You're just there. And you go on the ride. You ride through life, only you get to look out the window. And you get to look at the amazing beauty that surrounds you. There's an existential truth to it. In awakening, you understand the temporary, temporal, transient nature of life. You absolutely understand it. And you understand it in a way, not just that you have an intellectual appreciation, but that you absolutely understand why it's essential to love this moment. Because it's the only one you have. It's the only one guaranteed to be, because it's happening. And because something occurs inside you that understands that the entire universe came into being for you to have it. There are days I walk around in a state of total wonder. And there are days I walk around, like when I first moved to Seattle, in a state of complete chaos and misery. Awakening did not remove me from that. It did not remove me from the drama of life. I started to do what my friend Paul Hederman calls brucing. Brucing is when you forget, when your ego mind just takes over. And every awakened person I know has that happening. As perfect as you are, you're still there. You still have a body mind. And what happens when you're brucing, in my case, or your case, and, you know, what happens is you get shown what's still there. The part of you that's still not gone, if you will. You feel when you awaken that you're free of everything that Bruce represented, and then they say, you still got stuff to be shaved off, and they present it to you full bore, and then they start shaving it. And it's completely miserable, but it's also completely strengthening and liberating. It's like the gym. I told Jeremy yesterday, I said, boy, you have more in your bag of tricks than I ever imagined. He said, you haven't seen anything yet. And I know he's right, because I know that if I want to keep growing, if you will, that there's going to be bigger and bigger demand, because that's how it works. Spiritually, it's the same thing. When they say they're going to take everything from you, that you are, Rudy said, that in the end you become nothing. And I was totally on board with that until I realized what it means to have everything taken away. And then when I thought, when they took Bruce away, the name Bruce and all of the stuff that Bruce seemed to want in life, I thought, well, I'm free. But boy, oh boy, was I wrong. There was so much more that needed to be sort of wiped off the slate. And what it really is, it's a relationship with Shiva. Those of you who understand the Hindu trinity, Brahma the creator, Vishnu the preserver, Shiva the destroyer. Rudy, whose spiritual name is Rudrananda, Rudrananda is the wild side of Shiva. In other words, the impolite part of Shiva. So he's not saying, I'm going to take this away from you. He's going, like that. He's taking away, dismembering you, really, from all of your stuff. And the last 2 months in Seattle were dismemberment for me. At least that's how they felt. And nothing in me liked it. And I'm finding, now that I've coming into springtime in Seattle. Sun is shining, I think you can see. I'm finding rebirth, a complete rebirth. And the rebirth is not of me. The rebirth is life itself returning in all of its amazement. And I wake up in the morning, I drive in the car, and I go, wow, wow, wow. And I do it a lot. I'm amazed by it. I may have talked about this in my last talk, but I'll talk about it again. The yin-yang that I always imagined as this very big ends of two very large poles now have come into like this. Yin-yang, yin-yang, yin-yang. So good and bad, good and bad, good and bad are just completely alternating, just like molecules, just like fire. And my life is like that. It's like intense beyond belief. And it is wondrous beyond belief. And nothing in me gets what it is. Nothing gets what it is. I can't tell you I get it, but I know it is. And that's what's astounding. I know it is. This is happening. This is it. And the journey from waking up in the morning and not knowing this is it, and knowing this is it, can be lifetimes. I can't believe when I look at people on the street and I go, I try to calculate how long before they will ever understand who they are. How many lifetimes will it take before they finally go, oh. And it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. Because the level of density and ignorance and obscuration and distraction is so enormous that if I were to go to these people and say, this is not what you think it is. This is real. This is beautiful beyond belief. Any of those things that I'm trying to say to you, they would look at me like a total idiot. What are you talking? They wouldn't even want to hear it. And if they did want to hear it, they wouldn't know how to sustain it because those muscles aren't built to hold it. So what we're doing here is building the muscle so that you can actually wake up in the morning and walk through an entire day open in a muscular way to the amazement of your own life. That's what you're doing. You're walking through the extraordinary truth of your being every day, every second of every day. And if you have the muscle to support that, you will be constantly amazed, constantly grateful, feeling love, and feeling unbearable sadness for all of the people who are right there with you and don't know it. And there's nothing you can do except love them and be present with them. That's your job. Love them and be present in spite of their absolute ignorance. Sometimes presence itself is so extraordinary, it actually breaks through the cracks of their resistance and they go, oh. You can see it. You can see it at times. I sit with certain people who are very closed. And I've talked about this, I think, but I will talk about their subjects. I don't want to be too specific because I don't want them to know who I'm talking about. But I will talk about their stuff, which is boring as can be to me, but it doesn't matter because it doesn't matter what we're talking about. I just talk it. And I listen to them and we have this exchange and I can feel them getting lighter and freer because they're talking their thing. And they're so happy to be just sharing their crazy drama. And as I stay open and present with them, their presence starts to emerge. Because they're not being rejected, they're not being put in a box, they're not being resisted, they're being loved. And as a result of being loved, something transpires. I can feel it and I know they feel it. And I know when this time of our lunch is over, they walk away for a period of time enriched, not by the food, but by the presence that was happening in the atmosphere. That's what we get to do with each other. And a conscious person does it. An unconscious person sits at the table and just creates tension and drama. And you yell and fight and you leave the restaurant, you pay the bill, you go home and you're miserable. Which is how you arrive. You don't want that in life. You want to arrive at every situation and make it better. And the incredible thing about arriving at presence is you don't have to do much but show up. Just be there. And things change and transform and a kind of beauty shows itself. Beauty, truth, reality. That's what this is made out of. What's the universe built out? What are the building blocks of the universe? Truth, beauty, reality, and let's add love. That's what it's made out of. The resistance to that creates ugliness, misery, illusion, drama. And, you know, science is making some major discoveries right now about the Big Bang. And one of the things they've discovered, they've known this before, but it's pretty clearly now that they're seeing it, that the Big Bang, in the moment it went like that, had an immediate, almost immediate, it took about a 400 billionth of a second, to have a reaction against it. So as it was going like that, something was going like that. And that's where we are, every one of us, exploding outward and resisting the explosion. Relax. Let it explode. Let it go where it wants to go. None of us are in control. None of us are in control. We are part of something that is so big and so vast and so amazing and so mysterious. And we think we're in control and we think we're driving this truck. We are not. It's happening. Sit back, enjoy the ride. It's an amazing ride. And you will at some point find, if you build health into your system, if you get stronger, if you go against your own sense of, I don't want to go to the gym today, and you just do it. If you sit and meditate, even if you don't want to meditate, you just do it. What happens is you become a very powerful vessel for truth, beauty, love, reality. And you will walk through life with it. You'll be strong, you'll be capable, you'll be amazing yourself, and you will amaze yourself and others around you. Not that you will benefit from that because there's nobody there to benefit, but you will feel you are serving the universe or the universe is being served through your presence. So, go to the gym, meditate, enjoy your life, recognize that it's more of a gift than anybody can possibly imagine, and that to walk around crying and being miserable and hating your existence is truly, truly sad, because it just takes a few push-ups and it all changes. Any questions? Don't feel bad. Nobody ever has questions. I don't know. Yes?
Since this is a new class, I'll ask a new student question. Mm-hmm. And please pretend like I haven't been studying with you for 2 or 3 decades, okay?
Okay.
I've had the same problem since I've started, which is an overactive mind. And it's really difficult to go deeper sometimes because the mind is the slayer of the soul, and that phrase was written for me. I'm not sure there's an answer.
I've sat with you for several decades, and I've watched your mind do all that. It's not about controlling the mind, because you can't, really. It's about watching the mind. You have to just step back. You have to let go, and you have to identify in yourself that space that is separate from and an observation of the mind. It's absolutely there. You can watch the mind do its thing. And several things happen. I may have said these to you before. One of the things that happens to the mind when it's watched and observed is it experiences a kind of shame. And it goes, whew! And there you are, just watching this thing wither in the moment. It just withers. It's not in any way defeated. It's just kind of shamed, and it's kind of looking for, like my granddaughter, another way to get through the system, you know, to do the thing that they shouldn't be doing, but they're going to check it out. The mind does exactly that. But what you need to do is recognize, if possible, what it is that's watching the mind. What is that thing that isn't in it, but is observing it? And that's the key. Because when you see that, when you realize that you are that quiet space, you can fall into it, back into it, build a place within it, like bring a pillow into it, and just sit. And just go, okay. And just be there. that space is actually very powerful. And if you can hold onto that space, which means not hold like this, but like this, surrender, just be in that space, anything that tries to come in, you will actually watch. The mind is very interesting. It usually tends to form, I don't know, for me, down here. The stuff starts to rise up. And when it starts to rise up, if you look down and go, uh-oh, or you engage it in any way, it takes over. It fills all of your space. It just completely takes over. And you have to do all this work again to get quiet and separate and to able to look at it. But if you are very conscious, you'll see the beginning of this mind force start to rise up, and all you have to do is go, no, 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 no. You just don't need it. You don't need it, and you don't let it come. If it does come full force, then you have to have the muscle to say no to your mind, sit down, bring yourself to the table, and go, I'm going to surrender. Take your breath, you ask inside for help to surrender, and mean it. Help me to surrender. The problem for you is you so love your mind, you so are entranced by your mind, by everything it brings up, you're so involved in the dance and the drama and the spectacle of it, that you don't really want to do it. So you're in a 3-decade, as you want to put it, that, and probably 5 billion lifetimes involvement with this unbelievable distraction. Now, we can't blame you because the mind is only part of being, but it's we're all, every person in this world, totally caught up in life and drama and our own involvement in the life. We don't see what life is. We're just caught up in the incredible manifestation of it. So manifestation has a pull, an enormous pull on everybody, and the mind is part of that. But learning how to step back from your mind with your breath, with the asking for help to surrender, absolutely allows you a moment of clarity. And that clarity is, I am not the mind. I am the observer of the mind. I am that. And then you start to become aware. There comes a point where this awareness weaves through mind activity. And the mind activity and awareness are happening simultaneously. That's a little bit yin-yang stuff. You're aware of your own madness. You're in your madness and aware of it at the same time. And you don't fight it, you just go, I get it. And you just sit. It is, if you want to be buffeted by intense winds and thunderstorms, that's where you will be buffeted. But you just go, okay, okay, okay. And you'll go through it. Life really will do that to you. And you can't always be completely separate, but you will have an awareness of separation. You'll have an awareness of observation, even while you're in it. And that's a much more powerful spiritual practice than sitting in a cave and just watching. The biggest problem with people who are in caves, who go back into the world if they go back into the world, is they're immediately confronted by all the stuff they left behind. And they think they've worked it all through sitting in the cave, and then the world comes at them. You know, the car almost runs over them. You know, the brother they haven't talked to in 30 years has got recriminations, the list that long. Stuff happens. It's just ugly. It's miserable. And they don't always have the strength. They're perfect in the cave, but they're not perfect at home, back in the world. Rudy's teaching, which was always really fundamentally important to me, is this is the teaching. This world is where you learn it. In the world is that thing. The world is the truth. And if you can go yes to the magnitude and the dynamic and the vastness of what is, you become this self, yourself, your vast present self. This is yourself, for whatever it's worth. Your mind and everything else, it's yourself. The opportunity to find the observer is a rare event for people. Almost nobody does it. Something has to lead you to it, and usually it is the suffering that comes from being that caught in your own mind. And you have been brought to that table for 3 decades, and you have yet to have, I guess, enough suffering or enough whatever it is to finally say, I can't do this anymore. I have to move into the still spot. I have to have the muscle to move into the still spot at will. And that's really something you have to do.
Fortunately, my mind doesn't, I don't get caught up in the minutiae of daily life, so that's, I avoid a lot of suffering just by, it's just during the practice that I would like to be deeper, but I have done well in not getting caught up in the...
You're still here. It's pretty amazing. And you've been here, and over the course of time, you have done battle with some major stuff. Mm-hmm. You know? Look, I'm not trying to... I don't want to be critical, because I'm not. I you know, and I understand why you're still asking that question, mm-hmm. but there is a deep and profound goodness and truth in you, a real seeker in you, and it has been active for all this time. The thing you need to find is, you know, you have a particular construct. It's going to be harder for you, perhaps, than for many other people, but you simply have to find the absolute sincerity and earnestness inside yourself that finally said, okay. And you'll do it. It will just happen like that, and you'll have enough control at that point not to have to ever bother with this kind of sort of overwhelming situation again. You'll just say yes to it. People now get scared to ask questions because I spend 20 minutes answering them. I will ask if there's any more questions, but if not, thank you guys for coming. I really appreciate that you were here. I really, as each one of you walked through the door, I said, oh my God, these are remarkable people. You know, I mean, it was like instantaneous. You just go, wow. It's of course you would be the ones that would appear here. You I don't know how aware you are of how remarkable you are, but you are each of you very, very remarkable. And thank you for making this class possible. I will tell you, for as long as I'm here, I will continue to sit here on Sunday mornings now, and you're always welcome. I know every one of you comes from long distances and you have great excuses not to show up, and that's fine. You don't have to be here, and I don't take attendance. In the beginning, we may ask you if you're coming. You don't have, just because we want to plan brunch. If you're not coming, do not feel personally embarrassed that you're not coming. It's okay. But I may have to ask you to just say no, not coming. And if you want to get off the list of people being asked that question, it's fine as well. As I said to you in the introductory class, I don't care where you practice. I don't care who you sit with. I just care that you find a practice that allows you to further the awareness that you are already bringing to this and to take it to a place of liberation, because you deserve it, you have a right to it, and it's yours. So thanks for being here.
Thank you.